Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Remember, we are also live on Facebook. Just visit DW Africa.
Coming up on the program, police in Uganda have arrested renowned opposition lawmaker and musician Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, along with 34 others, including journalists, after President Yoweri Museveni's convoy came under attack in northern Uganda.
Presidential motorcade was attacked. One of the cars in the convoy was smashed. Its hind screen was smashed.
And the International Crisis Group, in its latest report, has warned that Cameroon needs to reintegrate ex-Boko Haram fighters to avert a possible return to insurgency.
We do not see the question of the vigilante group's demobilization as part of the security agenda in 2018 for Cameroon.
Well, these are just some of the stories that we've lined up for you in detail. But first, here's a chance to listen to some other stories making world headlines, but in brief.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Reports indicate that hundreds have died in a fight in the eastern African town of Ghazni, including around 150 civilians, according to the United Nations. Ghazni is a strategic provincial capital 2 hours from Kabul, from where government troops aided by the US are trying to dislodge Taliban insurgents. At least 30 people died and many more were injured in Italy after a motorway bridge collapsed over the northwestern port city of Genoa. Journalist Philip Willen, who is based in Rome, described the scene for DW.
We can see that huge sections of cement have collapsed onto the city beneath it. But also an eyewitness who was just meters away said that the bridge seemed to crumble to dust at the moment that it collapsed. So clearly something radically wrong with it.
Three Ugandan lawmakers and some of their supporters were arrested after stones were thrown at President Yoweri Museveni's convoy late on Monday, according to a police spokesman. The driver of musician and opposition lawmaker Robert Kyagulanyi was shot dead during the arrest. According to DW's correspondent in Kampala, 34 people were detained, including several journalists. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The Democratic Republic of Congo has started using the experimental MAB-114 Ebola treatment on patients in the east of the country, the first time it has been deployed against an active outbreak. MAB-114 was developed by the US Institute of Health and proved 100% effective when tested on monkeys. Congo's health ministry says the current Ebola outbreak has spread into Ituri province. Of 41 reported deaths, 14 have been confirmed as Ebola. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said his country will boycott U.S. electronic goods to retaliate against sanctions imposed by the White House. Erdogan blames an ongoing currency crisis in Turkey on them. The lira has lost almost 50% of its value since the beginning of the year. Observers say U.S. sanctions are only one factor in a crisis also caused by Erdogan's interference in central bank policies and ensuing lack of trust by foreign investors. Turkish economist Mustafa Sanmez told DW that contrary to the president's wishes, interest rates will have to be raised.
The country has to pay $230 billion in foreign debt over the next 2 months. Turkey won't be able to raise this much money with low interest rates. In the end, Turkey will have to look for help from the IMF.
British police have arrested a man who they believe deliberately drove a car into pedestrians before crashing into barriers outside London Parliament on Tuesday. Three people were injured, but none life-threateningly. The police are treating the occurrence as a terrorist incident and say the man is not cooperating with authorities. Five European Union countries agreed on Tuesday to take in 141 migrants on board the Mediterranean rescue ship Aquarius. This prompted Malta to allow the ship, already barred from three coastal states, to dock. Refugees aboard Aquarius, run by the Franco-German charity SOS Mediterranee and Doctors Without Borders, will be taken in by France, Germany, Portugal, Spain and Luxembourg. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
This is Africa Link with me, Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And at this moment, we'd like to shout out to Emmanuel Awule, who says he's listening live from Accra, Ghana. Keep on doing the great job, he says. Rutarika Alex says he's listening from Kigali. And Hafsa Kerao says she is listening from London. Big ups. Anyway, we begin the program in Uganda, where three lawmakers and at least 34 people have been arrested after an opposition crowd attacked President Yoweri Museveni's convoy with stones on its way from a campaign rally in northern Uganda. The president had been in the area to drum up support for a candidate from the ruling party at a time when the opposition was also holding its own rally nearby.
Also arrested was opposition lawmaker and musician Robert Chagulanyi, popularly known as Bobby Wine, whose driver was also shot dead during the chaos, according to a police spokesman. It is not the first time that political campaign rallies in Uganda turn bloody. From Kampala, Alex Jita sent this report.
Leading opposition lawmaker Robert Chagulanyi was arrested in the northwestern town of Arua, where he was campaigning for an opposition candidate in a hard-fought by-election that also drew President Yoweri Museveni in support of the ruling party candidate. According to the police spokesperson Emilian Kaima, Chagulanyi was arrested for obstructing the presidential motorcade, during which one of Museveni's official vehicles had a windscreen damaged, as explained by Kaima.
The presidential motorcade was attacked. One of the cars in the convoy was smashed. Its hind screen was smashed. Because the cars were in motion, the president was leaving Boma grounds and met fans of one of the aspirants, Mr. Kassiano Wadri. And the attack was, of course, stone throwing. So what happens? The intervention to calm down this situation resulted in one of the people he has seen being shot by a stray bullet.
Chagulanyi is a popular musician in Uganda who won a parliamentary seat last year and is considered one of the most powerful politicians within the opposition and a big threat to Museveni's firm grip of power in Uganda. However, opposition leader Norbert Mao believes Bobi Wine's strategy is bound to fail.
For somebody to think that a disorganized group can dislodge such an entrenched and greedy contraption like the NRM, that kind of campaign does not give hope. True enough, we all believe in people power, but the example of Egypt must teach us a lesson. Ultimately, it is organized groups that can take control and maintain control.
President Yoweri Museveni is also the chairman of the ruling National Resistance Movement, and as such, campaigns for most of the members of his party whenever there is an election. But Godiba Tumushabe, an advocate and a policy analyst, says the president's involvement in lower-level campaigns has continuously put ordinary people's security at risk.
The handlers of the president may need to take a step back and try to pull him out of these micro-political situations. Because the president is a president. You can't keep on running around the country that you are doing a by-election here and there. It makes him look bad. I think that the NRM people may want to separate our president from their chairman, because you can't just be a president and then you go and start operating like an LC1 or LC5 chairman doing those micro campaigns.
That report was compiled by Alex Jita in Kampala, Uganda.
This story has gotten a lot of comments. There's Hassan Kings who's listening to us live on Facebook. He's saying Bobby Wine is our president.
Yeah.
And Ronald from Germany saying, as a Ugandan, I'm used to seeing the president use state machinery to destroy anyone opposing his position. There is the saying, never suppress people to an extent that they have nothing to lose. I think that this is the level of majority of Ugandans have reached.
And also Joshua Mwanguzi, who's also listening from Uganda, he's typed hashtag police, stop your games. That's a hashtag. And Wellington Olaya from Nigeria says the stakes are too high in African elections because of the access to public funds. He thinks so. Yeah, there's one comment from Didas from Rwanda. He says, what is happening in Uganda is a political crisis an encamped president will bring about problems to Uganda.
Also, Mensa from Ghana is asking, the president attacked? This is serious. Well, interesting comments right there.
Yeah, Eunice, I can see this debate going on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Please keep interacting among yourselves and then we shall come in, you know, to moderate these comments. Now, let's turn to Afghanistan, where officials say over 300 people have been killed in a battle between government troops and the Taliban for the control of the city of Ghazni. That's according to the United Nations. The dead included 150 Taliban fighters who were also killed in one of the fiercest battles in recent months. Hundreds of civilians have fled the city, and these numbers are yet to change because more details are coming in as we speak.
Now, the U.S. is providing military support to Afghan troops, and Washington has denied reports the city is on the verge of collapse. DW's Sandra Petersman recently returned from Ghazni and has been explaining more about the current situation in that part of Afghanistan.
Where we see a fifth day of fighting, we know that most people in the city are still without water, electricity, communications is down. So it's really difficult to get a clear picture of what's going on there because you can't just call people. So a lot of the information that we get from the ground is by those people fleeing. And there have been reports of the district hospital being completely overwhelmed with corpses and with people wounded. So we have no clear indication whether those are people in uniform or civilians. And people just really expressed a sense of disappointment because they said, we have been warning government for weeks now, but there was no, you know, sending of reinforcements. And now it really looked like government forces, Afghan National Security Forces, were caught by surprise on Friday, then once again needed the international help of especially American forces through air raids and also through boots on the ground. When everybody is focusing on one major incident, like the one in Ghazni now. Of course, Taliban used that when troops, moved around the country to ease the situation there. It opens up loopholes somewhere else. And now we have seen those two provinces in the north where major battle is going on. And clearly what it shows is if we want to see the Taliban at the negotiating table, they want to dictate terms. They want to be in a position of strength. And what they're showing here is through a massive piece of propaganda also that they are in a position of strength. You know, it's a very potent insurgency.
That was DW's Sandra Petersman. Now, the International Crisis Group, ICG, has said that the Cameroonian government should aim at encouraging more Cameroonian Boko Haram members to surrender. The ICG also warned that authorities should also prepare for the demobilization of some vigilantes.
Now, since 2017, former combatants who surrender to authorities are imprisoned in Maroua, northern Cameroon. Instead of reintegrating them in society, raising fears that might find ways of rejoining the terrorist group, as explained by Hans-Marie Hoengup from the ICG.
The disarmament, demobilization and reinstation of ex-Boko Haram members who have voluntarily surrendered to Cameroonian army, so as the post-conflict team not to be the key priority for Cameroonian government. We have been interacting during our research with key local administrative authorities in the form of so as people within the Ministry of Justice and Minister of External Relations in Yaoundé. And in several meetings that we have got, we did not see the question of the vigilante group's demobilization as part of the security agenda in 2018 for Cameroon. In March 2018, the government has put in place an interministerial group to discuss issues such as the radicalization and also the DDR of ex-Boko Haram members. But this has not yet led to a clear policy from the government side. And I could testify that international partners of Cameroon are quite embarrassed by this situation as they are willing to support any coherent initiative from the government on that issue.
That was Hans-Marie Ngoup from the International Crisis Group, ICG. And of course, there's some comments there, Eunice.
Yes, Michael from Cameroon is saying there is nothing like Boko Haram in Cameroon. It's just a way of spending taxpayers' money, all in the name of fighting Boko Haram.
And Rogers from Southern Cameroon says Paul Biya's priority is sending his army to kill, abduct, you know, and touch down entire villages and many other uncivil activities in the north, west, and southwestern regions. These are some of your comments and their views. They don't reflect whatsoever the opinion of Deutsche Welle. We just encourage you to keep on the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
You are listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. My name is Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Isaac Mbugabi. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. As usual, we welcome your comments on the topics that we are going to bring you, or just that we are having on air. I can see Namanda Fred and Edisem Okpot have also joined in. He says Paul Biya should step aside as soon as possible. Many thanks for that. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will hear from a man who is on a mission to save endangered animals in Nigeria.
I wanted to have a breeding project where I could actually breed these animals and have them, you know, multiply. Because, yes, an endangered animal means that very soon, at the rate at which it's going, these animals would soon be extinct.
And on Focus on Europe this week, migrants in Paris get creative at a pop-up theater, so don't miss out on that. But we first head to Sierra Leone, where it has been 1 year since torrential rainfall caused devastating floods and mudslides in Freetown, the country's capital. This natural disaster left 1,141 fatalities, destroyed buildings, and thousands homeless.
It was not just caused by the heavy rainfall, but was also due to human error. For many years, the government did not heed to the experts' warning. Has that now changed after the catastrophe? DW's Adrian Krish was in Sierra Leone and filed this report, presented to you by Emma Wallace.
Maliki Kamara is visiting his former hometown of Regent, a suburb of Freetown, on a rainy day. It's a painful journey for him. Kamara lived in this area with his family for 10 years. He remembers the day vividly, exactly 1 year ago, when he went to work early in the morning in the pouring rain. Shortly after, a powerful mudslide destroyed hundreds of homes, including his own.
Last year, I didn't tell my family the whole sitting.
Last year, this time, I was still sitting here with my family. We talked, played with the children, and now I will never be able to see them again. No one is helping me. I am suffering. This hurts so much.
And it's over it now, and it's been pain.
Almost his entire family was killed by the mudslide. His daughter, Fatima, just 7 months old, and his wife. The only survivor was his 12-year-old son, Daniel, who was rescued with severe injuries. He even lost a leg. Kamara says he was given the land by local authorities, but there was no official building permit, so who is to blame?
The government.
The government is to blame. We weren't living in the so-called green belt, where construction is prohibited. We built our houses outside this area, in a section marked as safe.
The Environmental Protection Agency has a different view. It says the houses were built in the green belt illegally. But Fode Moriba Jawad, the new head of the agency, admits that in the past there were hardly any checks.
They were not supposed to build. That's why I say it was due to weak governance, because nobody was supposed to build houses there.
According to environmental activist Haja Sise, residents are also partly responsible for last year's disaster. She herself was warning people just 2 weeks before it happened.
People, we are cutting down trees and the forest which are protected. People, we are burning charcoal. There are people we are mining stones in that particular area. They also do a wildfire within the forest. So what happened? It weakens the soil. And because the soils were weakened, that was one of the reasons.
Several factors contributed to the disaster last year. Inefficient authorities, citizens who ignored the risks, deforestation, and a massive population growth on the hills of Freetown. Additionally, climate change has been causing much less frequent but stronger rainfalls. That is why observers warn of further disasters in the future. Maliki Kamara and other survivors now live in emergency accommodation provided by the government. They may be safe, but they are an hour outside the city centre. There is no running water and no schools in the area. And residents still have to pay rent. A year on from the devastating mudslides, Kamara still doesn't know what the future holds for him and his son.
That report was compiled by Adrian Krish. And thank you to all of you who are listening to us live on our Facebook page, Edisemi Okpokiti, Hassan Kings, and Namanda Fred. Thank you for tuning in.
Africa on the move.
Now, the African continent is well known for its wild animals and nature reserves. But widespread hunting in Nigeria has seen the country's animal population continue to fall.
And with no effective laws against animal abuse and trade, Chinedu Mokbo is trying to combat it by setting up a sanctuary for animals. This story by Tenyola Shobowale and Pelola Akifenlayi is presented by Wanjiko Mwaura.
Creatures caught by illegal hunters are kept in captivity in a market in Lagos, Nigeria, for weeks, waiting for a buyer. 29-year-old Chinedu Mokbo has been visiting this market for over 15 years. His father first brought him here when he was just 9 years old. Seeing the animals suffer breaks his heart, so he rescues as many as he can afford. He bought a porcupine for 60,000 naira, which is about $166.
I came with a mission at that point in time. I said, no, I'm coming to get as many of these animals I can get out of this place into a much more comfortable environment to see them thrive, basically. No animal can thrive in these locations.
The illegal wildlife trade damages Nigeria's biodiversity. But for the local traders who want to remain anonymous, it's a means of putting food on the table.
I think we are on union on livestock like turkey.
We are dealing in livestock like turkey and chicken. I don't see anything bad in that. The government shouldn't stop us from selling chicken and rabbit and turkey. I don't see anything that is so special.
Chinedu brings the animals he rescues to the Green Fingers Conservation Garden. The young Nigerian started this sanctuary back in 2012 using his own money and runs it with any donation he can attract. He already has an impressive variety of animals in his sanctuary. In some cases, some of the animals are badly wounded, their recovery sometimes complex.
And one of the professions that I say is really lacking in Nigeria is veterinary medicine. Now, it's because of the need, it's been now tailored or focused to dogs, where there's no such thing as invasive surgery for even some animals. Think about having a dog. The vet always want to just administer drugs, but no surgery of whatsoever kind if the animal needs that.
Some of the animals in Chinedu's sanctuary are threatened species, vulnerable to extinction, like the black-crowned crane. Chinedu wants to create an environment where anyone, especially children, can learn to appreciate the value of our wildlife.
Another reason why I have them was because, yes, initially I wanted to have a breeding project where I could actually breed these animals and have them, you know, multiply. Because, yes, an endangered animal means that very soon, at the rate at which it's going, due to habitat loss and a few other things, these animals would soon be extinct. So having them here and breeding them gives room for a lot of people to come and see them.
Chinedu's ultimate goal is to establish conservation areas where he can release his animals into a protected environment.
A report by Teniola Shobowale and Peluola Akinfeleyi.
Focus Europe.
Even though new laws in France should cut processing time for asylum seekers in half, waiting for a decision on applications can still seem like an eternity. One group has created a pop-up space in Paris to help migrants take their mind off their bureaucracy.
And here they can be creative and even meet the locals. Jax Ganeiro has more.
Hello, welcome.
Once asylum seekers have registered with French authorities, even after long, dangerous journeys by sea and foot, the uncertainty can be stressful, especially with nowhere to go and nothing to do. The English charity, Good Chance, welcomes asylum seekers into a dome tent in Paris's 19th district. It's alive with art, music, and theater, all created by migrants. Each week, Parisians crowd in for an afternoon of singing, dancing, laughs, and emotional performances. Volunteers run creative workshops to help the migrants put together the week's show. Mohamed Mustafa, a 22-year-old refugee from Sudan, talks of his country's suffering in a poem he wrote in Arabic. But he told me he comes because the people are happy. Abdul Sabour, who teaches dance from his native Afghanistan, said the organization saved his life.
One day, really, I was really stressed, and I want to kill myself, like jump to the train, and then I decide to come here.
Many of the migrants are escaping repression, and Sabour says the creative workshops have given them the opportunity to blossom.
In Afghanistan, I was not dancing, and sometimes I'm dancing. There's many people who can't talk in front of the people, and now they're dancing, and they're talking, and they say stories.
The Good Chance Charity started in the Calais migrant camp, known as the Jungle, back at the height of the refugee crisis in 2015. It was founded by two English playwrights, Joe Murphy and Joe Robertson, the Joes as they're known, who went to see the camp with their own eyes.
And yeah, met lots and lots of people, all with a need to talk about what they were going through. And for us, that's what theatre is. So we decided that a really concrete way of helping there could be to build a theatre where people could tell their own stories together.
After the Calais camp was dismantled in 2016, Good Chance saw the need for building links between newly arrived migrants and locals. So they moved their program to Paris.
For us, art is a crucial tool, a secret weapon in that, because it allows you to have human relationships with people and get to know people in a much deeper way. So these spaces that we're building, like this one, are really an answer or an attempt to answer that question. How do we live together? How do we get to know each other? And that's what today a Big Hope Show is about.
The diversity of participants and volunteers, Joe Robertson says, makes it a show unlike any other.
You know, the great thing about working with people from lots of different places is that people bring their artistic traditions and their unique ways of expressing themselves, whether it's Afghan dance or Eritrean music or Sudanese poetry. And when those amazing traditions start to collide, beautiful new things emerge.
This summer is the third edition of the program in Paris. 28-year-old Marie Noor quit her job to volunteer full-time with Good Chance.
I just want to make something that makes sense, and so I took a big decision. I quit my job. It's not about refugees, it's not about migrants, it's really about friends.
Noor says she and her boyfriend have gone one step further and have taken a teenage asylum seeker into their home.
That report was by Jake Siganiro.
Now, news just in, Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita has claimed victory. This is according to his spokesman, and with official results not expected until a few days. But opposition candidate Soumaila Cissé vowed to reject the results of the presidential runoff vote, calling on supporters to rise up. We asked a question on our social media platform. Does the African continent need a body that is serious, independent and trustworthy to verify poll results? If yes, to which organ should the body be attached to? The AU. Well, this has a lot of comments coming in, and Matombo is saying an independent, transparent vote counting commission in Africa whose mandate comes from the civil society.
And Simeone Zawala says this is the problem with African elections. If it's possible, electoral bodies in some African countries be attached to the UN for supervision.
Frank Leonard Ozoike is saying UN should take up responsibility of organizing credible, fair and free elections in Africa, especially the presidential election.
And a comment from Hussein Imam says, I think Africa needs to change this philosophy. They always have excuses when they lose the election.
I'm not sure whether these are excuses.
I mean, but again, I mean, we're having this debate before we came on air with one of our colleagues, you know, Abubakar Jallow. And I mean, if you have a bunch of 25 opposition candidates against one man, what kind of results should you expect, Eunice? Well, that's a landslide victory. That's giving him victory on the silver platter.
Yeah, let's continue with our comments here. Jacqueline Mweni saying the problem I believe we have in Africa is that the old generation of political leaders do not readily accept defeat. And even when the elections are rigged, it's worth noting that the electoral bodies are not trustworthy.
because in most cases they're hand-picked anyway. Although they have a good name, they're called Independent Electoral Commissions in most of the countries. David Musafi has an interesting comment here, Eunice. He says, in Africa, we don't need elections. What is needed is presidential rotation.
Well, thank you so much for your comments. Do keep them coming and keep the debate going. You are still listening to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Njiro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Bye for now.